Hello, and welcome to Spartan Speak, a podcast from the Lansing State Journal and Detroit Free Press focused on Michigan State sports. I'm Phil Fred, your host, podcast producer, and sports writer for the LSJ, joined by Lansing State Journal sports storyteller, Nate Atkins. Nathan, how are you doing on this lovely Wednesday afternoon as the second signing period begins in college football?
Yeah, I'm doing well. I'm a little nostalgic because I kind of miss the old setup for signing day where it was just one big bang. And especially like when I know when you were coming up through high school, when I was coming up through high school, before this age of social media, so we can sound like old men for a second. But I liked when you would just find out when they went live to someone's signing day and they'd pull out the hats and they do their shenanigans. And now it's in like 85 different places and you have, you know, for as great a work as they do at 247, you have enough people with enough intel to spoil it before it happens. And so I'm just kind of, it's just a little muted to what it normally is, but it's still fun to follow.
Well, they spoiled it incorrectly for Keon Coleman, and we'll get into that here in a little bit. When you said nostalgic a couple minutes ago, not even a couple minutes ago, a minute ago, I thought you were going to talk about the NCAA football video games and the recruiting on there, which is a big thing for some of us and who like that particular thing. EA Sports announced yesterday that they were bringing back the college football game, which is pretty awesome.
Geez, you know, so much has happened since that news came out in Michigan State's world that I almost forgot about it. But yes, I'm so excited for that. And I was just thinking, you know, when they have that game out, so much has changed since that game came out when I was a senior in college. And just since then, you know, we've got the college football playoff. We've got the transfer portal. Can you imagine if you have to manage the transfer portal in that game? Oh, wow. You're trying to recruit kids in your own team and you're going, that would be awesome.
Nate, I hope so. I am not looking forward to more than anything in the world than that.
I know.
I love all the nuances of recruiting on the final version. It was 2014, right? That was the last one. Yeah. Like the nuances of the recruiting, the coaching carousel, and hopefully they keep all of those things. I mean, they basically just need to keep the dynasty mode as is, but maybe add the transfer portal.
Yeah. I actually think the year, not to get too into the weeds, but the second to last version of that game, the one with RG3 on it, it's the one I play all the time, partly because my 2014 disc broke, but also because the recruiting on that game is so much better. There's so many options to actually ask specific questions. And I just hope they let you get as into the weeds as possible on that, because that's as much as you can mirror the real world of college football. I mean, it's all a recruiting game these days, and that's why we're here to talk about it.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking about recruiting for most, if not all. Okay, fine, all. All of this podcast. What we're going to do is Nate and I are going to talk about the news that surrounded MSU football today with one decommitment and signing to a rival school and another commitment coming in. And then we'll look at the five players that Mel Tucker has currently brought in via the transfer portal. And then we'll take a look at the class as a whole, and Nate and I are going to kind of pick out a couple under the radar guys that we think might be, you know, potential future stars for Michigan State, the Joe Bocci's of the world or the Lev Bell's of the world, perhaps. So let's start with the news today. So there were some rumors, as I said earlier, we were recording on Wednesday afternoon. There were some rumors kind of floating around yesterday that Rayshon Benny, who has been committed to Michigan State since the end of last year, I believe November or December, I believe it was early December, might be November actually, that he was actually not going to sign with Michigan State and he was going to flip to rival Michigan. And obviously the Michigan State wars played out on Twitter as per usual. And then it was revealed this morning that Rayshon Benny was in fact flipping and signing with Michigan. I mean, that's a huge loss for the Spartans. He was a four-star defensive tackle. He was their second highest ranked recruit in the class behind Mao. Oh no. every time, Nate.
This is why you host and not me.
We'll say the four-star linebacker from Nevada. It's not Gay Teote, but We'll just call him Ma. So he's the second highest ranked recruit after Ma, or was the second highest ranked recruit in the class after Ma, and he ended up flipping to Michigan State. And there's nothing more painful than, you know, he's had a photo of him in Michigan State gear on his Twitter photo, Twitter profile photo since, you know, for a long time now, and then it goes to black, and then he commits to Michigan. And just that's a tough loss for the Spartans.
Yeah, especially an in-state guy, and that's obviously the inroads that the staff's trying to make. It's why Mel Tucker, you know, hired some Detroit area guys to try and win that when Michigan, it felt like, was slipping a little bit in state, and it seems like they've recovered in this class. It's tough, especially because, you know, as we, and we'll get to this with the guy they just got, but I think the two positions that Mel Tucker is going most after, and this is just my take on it, but the two positions he just out of the gates wants to add to right now are wide receiver and defensive line. And so today was a mixed bag on that front. But definitely hurts to not have the defensive tackle, because they're bringing in two defensive ends in this class that, you know, are the type of size that he wants. It's Tyson Watson and Alex Okilo, those kind of 6'5 type edge setter lengthy guys. But they could have used the other defensive tackle. They've just got the one in the class, Derek Harmon, but he's coming out of a real small lower level of play in Detroit. So Rashawn Benny was that guy that you hoped to come in and get some snaps as a freshman, but this is the world they live in, and they're going to flip some guys like they did with Keon Coleman, and they're going to get flipped sometimes. Unfortunately, it happened with the rival.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I remember back to the fall correctly, I think everyone had kind of tipped Benny to go to Michigan, and then were surprised when he flipped to Michigan State. I think that also played a part due to when the Spartans beat Michigan, you know, again on the field this past fall. But then at the end, you know, a couple months play out, even though Michigan State had probably just as good, if not a better season than Michigan, the Michigan allure, I guess, kind of in the end was enough to flip him, which is, like you said, a tough loss for the Spartans.
Yeah, and it could also be the, you know, the way things straightened out with Jim Harbaugh's contract. I mean, that had frozen a lot of recruiting on their end, and it seems like they've picked it up since that has settled down and they've gotten their staff a little bit younger. So these things fluctuate a little bit. You know, right now I think Michigan State's still, you know, that they're bummed about losing a guy like that to Michigan, but for them, this is the beginning. You know, they had a first year that was, even though they beat Michigan, not a great year. It's been a few years since Michigan State's looked very good in football. So this to them is the beginning. It's a tough hit, but if they start losing these guys like this in year four, I think that's when they're going to freak out a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's look at the positives for today for Michigan State. And as they got a commitment and signature from a 3-star wide receiver out of Louisiana in Keon Coleman. He is a guy who was ranked 4 stars by some recruiting services, including 24/7 Sports. But he is in their composite ratings, he is a 3-star. He's also a guy who is a high-level recruiter both football and basketball, and will also play basketball at Michigan State. He will be on scholarship with the football team and then play basketball on the side. He just is a 6'4", 200-pounder. He's just an overall great athlete who can do a lot. And, you know, Michigan State didn't have a receiver in this class as of yet, and he's the first and might end up being the only receiver as part of the 2021 class. And, you know, it seems like we talked a lot of the guys in previous year's classes, like Trayvon Morgan and Montori Foster, you know, guys with potentially high upside. And this is another guy with maybe a higher ceiling than those two guys.
Yeah, I was interested to see, you know, we talked about, I think the last time we did this, when they didn't have a receiver in this class, is making me look stupid as much as I say that they're going to recruit receiver. I think that was, now in hindsight, I think that was just a concentrated effort to get, you know, rather than a couple receivers or shots at a couple, let's get the one highest upside guy we can get, because that is the one position they've stocked this roster with coming back that's got a pretty good amount of talent, you know, bringing back Jalen Naylor and Ricky White and Jaden Reed. And there's not a lot of room for, I mean, they want to use several guys, but there's not a lot of room for guys to just break out onto the scene yet. But this is one who could. I mean, 6'4", like you said, who's got that explosion from basketball. And I was just looking at a little bit of his high school film, and they use him on screens all the time because it's a simple, let's get the ball in the hands of the guy that can make all these moves in the open field, kind of like he does in basketball when he just posterizes people for a dunk. So that's probably kind of how they'll start him out, is just use him in the explosive elements before you can develop him as a more nuanced receiver. But this is Mel Tucker dipping into the South, where, I mean, they just build athletes a little different down there, especially Louisiana. I mean, they're always turning out receivers, ever since Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry came out of the same class several years ago. So this is their opportunity to tip the scales a little bit athletically out wide, which is, like I keep saying, I think that's how they're always going to win, and that's how, or try to win, and that's going to be how they try to recruit the strong-armed quarterbacks, is saying, we are the guys who can get down the field and go up and get the ball, and this is one of the guys they hope can do that.
Yeah, in today's press conference, Mel Tucker talked a lot about you know, how he's coached, you know, two sport guys, you know, in the past, or recruited two high school two sport players. You know, I think there was a comment even about where he's never lost a recruit that wrestled and played football or something like that. And he kind of gave like Mecole Hardman comparisons to Keon Coleman in terms of the two sport athlete. I thought it was a interesting comparison.
Yeah, I mean, that's one guy he's a little familiar with, but it is interesting the way it played out, because I mean, we know how much Tom Izzo loves this football program, and he's probably more involved with it than usually the basketball coach would be, because he's, you know, he's Mr. Michigan State, but he also just absolutely loves football. So it was kind of an interesting assist from the sort of, you know, veteran basketball coach to just get involved a little bit. I mean, I think you definitely see, I haven't looked too much into him, but I would assume Keon Coleman's more of a football player than a basketball player from a recruiting standpoint. But the opportunity to play, and you talk about universities that have a semblance of both. I mean, he was originally committed to Kansas, which, you know, has been a beast in basketball, although they have the sanctions hanging over them, but they're nothing in football. So yeah. Michigan State, not great in football, but they're not Kansas, and they've got, you know, one of the better basketball programs. So it was just a nice way to kind of go get a kid that in theory should be hard for Michigan State football to go down to the South and pluck out this borderline four-star wide receiver. That's not very easy to do at the beginning of a rebuild, but they were able to do it in part because of Tom Izzo.
Yeah, and you know, we talked about how Benny got kind of flipped from MSU to Michigan. So the same thing with Keon Coleman. If you know, the 24/7 crystal ball predictions, a ton of predictions came in yesterday, both the Michigan State guys and national guys for Tulane for Keon Coleman. But and then I watched Keon Coleman's Instagram. He posted an Instagram video where he was talking about his commitment, and he said he had made the decision last night that he was going to Michigan State. So it's kind of interesting to see all those crystal ball predictions come in Tuesday afternoon, and then Tuesday night he's like, yeah, you know what, I'm going to Michigan State. But I think it's overall a great snag for Michigan State there.
Yeah, and I think that right there probably shows how much he wants to play basketball, because I mean, he is far better of a player, football player, than Tulane. But sometimes guys will look at a lower level like that for the opportunity to play both. So if Michigan State's open to it, it's like, well, yeah, I'm going to go there over Tulane. And so we'll see how that works out. I mean, it's not the easiest thing to balance those two. I know Mel kind of says, oh, it'll work out. And he's brought up, you know, football and baseball players, football and this is a little different when it's basketball. So it can definitely be done. But I've seen recruits in the past. I remember one that stands out to me was Terrell Pryor wanted to play both at Ohio State. Mm-hmm. And because it's quarterback, it's different. But it's just never as easy as it seems going in. But it's, you know, I think for as much as Izzo loves the football program, it has a better chance to work here than maybe some other universities.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what school it was. I think it was Bethune-Cookman, but don't hold me to that. Like East Lansing's Andrew Anthony, who was a Michigan State target, who also ended up signing with Michigan. I think Bethune-Cookman offered him a scholarship to play both sports. So that does happen. That does happen from time to time.
And if Izzo had offered a spot, maybe he'd be in this class too.
There you go. I think we.
It's a lesson.
I think we found the reason why he's in Ann Arbor, not East Lansing. All right,
Zach.
We are going to come back to the class here in a little bit, but we're going to turn our focus now to the five transfers that Michigan State has brought in since the season has ended. Okay, and I'll list these off here. First off, we'll start with the quarterback, which is Anthony Russo, 6'4", 235 from Temple. Two running backs, Harold Joyner, 6'3", 218 from Auburn. Kenneth Walker, 5'9", 191 from Wake Forest. Defensive end Drew Jordan, 6'2", 255 from Duke. And then Jarrett Horst, a 6'6", 305-pound offensive tackle from Arkansas State. Well, let's start with we've talked a lot about Anthony Russo before, but we'll just go ahead and start with him. I think someone asked a question today about how they plan to handle him and Hamp Fay coming in as well. So, and obviously I think people think they view Hamp Fay as the QB of the future. Then you also still have Peyton Thorne still here. So, I mean, what do you think of the quarterback situation?
Yeah, I think Russo's in the mix. Fay could be in the mix, but he's probably on the outside looking in just as the freshman who's still so inexperienced. I mean, Hampton Fay has started, I think, 10 games as a high school quarterback, you know, and now he's a true freshman showing up. So But Anthony Russo is the polar opposite of that. He's a guy who started a ton at Temple, and he's in his sixth year. I could have wrote about this when I wrote about Anthony Russo. I think he just kind of raises the floor of this group. If you think back last year, you know, when they're shuffling those quarterbacks, Rocky Lombardi to Peyton Thorne, one of the issues there was they did not fully know what they had in either guy. You know, there obviously wasn't the spring. There wasn't the non-conference tune-ups. But more than that, neither guy had really played much at all, at least in recent times, since Rocky Lombardi played a couple years ago. So Anthony Russo, there's no real guessing about what he is. He is a big-bodied guy who can really drive the ball down the field and move a little bit, who also will turn the ball over. And so I think if people think that, you know, he's going to get fixed in his sixth year with what could be, again, a sort of reduced spring, I think that's being a little too optimistic. But at the same time, you know, he's a guy who kind of has a knowledge of the game and who will drive the ball down the field, isn't afraid to make the throws that Michigan State wants quarterbacks to attempt. And he's just going to kind of challenge everyone else in that competition. You've got to beat this out. We know what this guy is, so you've got to be better than what he's already shown. And so I just think it'll help out. He's probably, you know, I'd probably put him neck and neck with Peyton Thorne for that battle with Hampton Fan, the outside looking in, heading into spring. But it at least puts you in you at least feel more confident about that position not bottoming out than you did a year ago.
For sure. And then you mentioned about how all these guys are kind of lift up every position, you were talking about how Russo and kind of lifts up the position. I think all these guys lift up these positions quite a bit. I like Drew Jordan quite a bit as a defensive end. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a 3-year starter at Duke, four-year starter, I think, actually at Duke, and he's got another year of eligibility, and he is going to be in Michigan State. I think he's a guy who can contribute right away. Same thing with Jarrett Horst. I think there was a rumor floating on something I saw on Twitter where Michigan State beat Oklahoma out for him in terms of a transfer. So, I mean, that feels like a pretty good sign going forward, especially since Oklahoma's probably on that, you know, extra level ahead of, you know, the rest of the Power Five groups. And then the running backs, which did not produce at all last year. And you got two guys who have been very productive in their college careers.
Yeah, and especially quarterback, like you mentioned, running back. Those are positions that bottomed out last year, and it made it very hard to, you know, do much with the other positions when those were as bad as they were last year. So it definitely does raise the floor, in part because you're adding a lot more experience to this team. You know, you talk about like Kenneth Walker at running back. It's like Drew Jordan. Those guys have played a lot so far. And again, you know what they are, and so it helps you measure that up against newcomers, freshmen, guys who have not yet stepped onto a field and into a game situation and had to face adversity. So I think it definitely helps in that sense. I'm with you on Drew Jordan. I'm maybe not, you know, I'm not blown away by watching him, but what he does, you can definitely see fitting how they want to build this team, where they want depth at those positions on the defensive line. And they want the kind of guy that if they're going to keep recruiting these, I call them Michael Fletcher types, because that's just the first they've gotten. But, you know, the 6'5 rangy guys who win with length and set the edge, if you want to kind of win with those guys, you know, you got to kind of work the whole pocket for that to matter. And Drew Jordan's a guy who isn't going to blow you away with sack totals and just dominate his guy, but he holds contained super well. So if you have a guy winning on one end and another guy containing on the other, I mean, that's a pretty good bookend, short of obviously having beasts on both ends. So I definitely like that one. And Kenneth Walker, I think, that's the kind of guy that's like, yeah, Kenneth Walker, the running back out of Wake Forest, that guy's worked in his own run scheme. So he's and done really well. I mean, he was on pace in a 12-game season last year, he was on pace for 22 touchdowns. So that guy just has a way of getting the ball quickly, decisively, and powering into the end zone. And that's the kind of short yardage stuff they clearly did not have at all last year.
Look,
I mean,
anytime
the third and one, fourth and one nightmares should be over.
Anytime you can go through an entire season without getting a rushing touchdown from a running back, you've got to do that.
Did they convert a single fourth and one with the run game? A game they tried it and it went nowhere.
I mean, I'm sure they did. I mean, I think they did some. They started going to QB sneaks at some point to get those short conversions.
But yeah.
So you like Walker over Joyner then more?
Yeah, for next year, Joyner is. I mean, he is. That's kind of how you'd build a running back in a lab. I mean, it's that kind of southern Alabama running back who goes to Auburn, and but he didn't. They just did not trust him to play at Auburn in an offense that really needed some juice, and so that tells me something was off for him. Either I don't know if it was conditioning or just mentally and picking up the playbook. So I just have a feeling he has a bigger learning curve, but you definitely see the build and the potential there. And I could see it being a thing where Joyner just gets more of the lion's share this year, but, or Walker gets more of the lion's share this year. And then Joyner, you know, with guys like Jordan Simmons, just kind of create the future a little bit more.
Yeah. So out of these five guys, who do you think are day one starters?
Definitely Kenneth Walker. And I think Jordan will as well at defensive end.
What do you know?
I go back and forth on Russo. Day one.
Make your pick now, and you can't change it. You can't change it for the next 8 months.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah. For now, I'm going to go with Peyton Thorne still at quarterback. Okay. I think he's more of a guy that gets Peyton Thorne moving in that direction. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if he started either.
Yeah. So you don't think Horst is going to be starting day one?
That I don't know. I honestly haven't looked enough into him to be able to say. I mean, it also depends on who comes back. Yeah, I mean, they could have both starting tackles back, Jordan Reed and A.J. Curry. Yeah. We haven't 100% heard on those guys. I know Jordan Reed will be back, but A.J. Curry, I don't know 100% if he's going to be back. Jordan Reed's a starter for sure. So it's a possibility for all these guys.
And Tucker was asked about those guys today, but some of the guys he got specific on, and then some of the guys he didn't. So.
Yeah, and Curry was one of those that was sort of, well, we hope so.
Well, so is Jordan Reed, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've heard that Jordan Reed's, I'm pretty confident he's coming back.
Sources.
Things change, so you never.
Gotcha. No, so, well, you're predicting 22 touchdowns for Kenneth Walker next year. I think that's the big, that's the headline from the from the transfer discussion.
And you're predicting 22 sacks from Drew Jordan.
Yes, this is true. I mean, he can at least match Kenny Willekes's 18 and a half or whatever it was from like 2 years ago, 3 years ago. So,
yep, that's the bar.
At the minimum. All right. So if you want to read the tea leaves also from today's press conference, how many more transfers do you expect in and what positions do you think those might come at?
I think Mel said they were going to try and get four or five more. And if you look at the way they've done this so far, I mean, these are guys that, to our last point, are guys they think can start, at least compete to start. I don't think they want to bring many in to do anything else because there's a whole reason why you're getting, you know, someone else's players and guys with experience is to try and raise the floor of everything. So as far as which positions that, you know, I would think maybe because they had just lost Rashawn Benny, defensive line, the interior of the defensive line could be a spot they look at. I think they'll always look at offensive line right now. I mean, you see how much they're recruiting in this class and four offensive linemen. That is clearly a group they're trying to remake, and for good reason, based on the athletic traits of that group. So if they can get guys who are closer to the build they want at offensive line, I think they'll look there too. I mean, there's certain positions you can cross out. I don't think you're going to see many wide receivers or running backs because they've got so many of both of those. And part of transfer portal is convincing those guys that you can come here and play. And so it's going to be kind of the positions that are easier to break into. So I would say the interior offensive and defensive line positions are probably their easiest spots, but I still think there's some spots in the defensive secondary where you could say that too.
I found it interesting that Messiah DeWeaver is in the transfer portal for the Spartans who might remember him. He was a quarterback commit. He was on campus for a year or two and transferred to Old Dominion, and now he's back in the portal. So, and that's just a bigger thing where there are so many people in the portal here. Mm-hmm. There's so many players.
Too many.
This is some of these guys. There's so many of these guys just might end up on the outside looking in.
Yeah, there's not enough homes for them, and so that's why, you know, Michigan State came out. I think they're kind of doing this in two waves. When he says they're bringing in 9 or 10, and they brought in five so far, it's kind of like, well, let's go out and get the guys we definitely want here. And then they're going to get real selective here from here on out, where they kind of, you know, take a lot longer on some of these guys because they can, because there's just not enough homes for all these guys, and they're not all going to be competitive markets because some of these guys just got to find a place to go.
Yeah. I was going to ask you to pick a defensive tackle or two who might might be interested, but I think there's just too many here.
Yeah, I haven't gone through that list yet, so
I will say a random here. I'm going through this list here. One of the defensive tackles is Eston Miles. He is a 6'3", 305-pound defensive tackle from Western Michigan who put his name in the portal, and he is a Williamston grad, so he's a local kid.
Hmm.
But the
6'3".
Yeah, that might be too short for what Mel Tucker wants. So the highest-rated defensive tackle, at least from their high school rankings, left is Matthew Polamau. I'm probably pronounced that wrong. He is a 6'2", 295 defensive tackle who just put his name in the portal from Kansas State. So Nelson Jenkins from LSU. So those are both three-star guys. So maybe something to keep an eye on going forward.
Well, especially that position, defensive line, that's one that's a little different than some of these others where I think they just want to play a ton of guys there. I mean, they want fresh bodies all the time. It's just kind of how Mel Tucker approached it in the SEC, where you bring in as many high-level athletes and get them playing at the fastest speeds they can and see what an offense does with it. So that one's going to be a little easier to convince guys that, yeah, we may have projected starters per se, but there's lots of reps to get there. Whereas obviously positions like quarterback and even right now wide receiver, positions like that are a little harder to sell.
Exactly. All right, well, let's move on from there. Let's go and turn our focus back to the 2021 recruiting class. I know on our run sheet here, and by run sheet I mean a text message that you sent me earlier today.
Oh, we're professional.
Yes, we were going to talk about under the radar guys, but before we get to that, I want to start just with who is your favorite prospect, your number one prospect, the one you like the most, the one who can make the most impact, who will be the big man, you know, out of this class.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that original, but I got to go with the guy whose name we struggle with, Ma. We had talked about him, outside linebacker out of Las Vegas, the one four-star they have in this class. We talked about him on one of these podcasts, but he's a guy I do think will step right in as a freshman and do some things, certainly at least on special teams. But also, he is built a lot like Antoine Simmons was, that kind of smaller, slimmer linebacker who can just kind of fly, and just the force momentum he brings just kind of adds something different. It adds an attitude. It adds a, you know, potential to knock the ball out. How quickly can he kind of grasp all this? Again, we'll see how much the world allows for spring practices and spring game and all that, but the athletic traits just kind of pop off when you watch him. And he's gotten to watch his brother, obviously at USC, and who flashed as a freshman. So I think he can do kind of the same thing, just step right in here at a position where they don't play a lot of linebackers, but they have a big hole there without Antoine Simmons, and they need that kind of athletic enforcer, and he can do that.
All right. It's pronounced Now Gayote. Now Teote. we'll get this down at some point.
I feel like you just said it two different ways.
I did. Now Teote. Ma, okay. Now Teote. Say it five times.
Eventually we'll get to talk to him. We'll just ask him to say it. Yeah. We'll ask him to say it five times because it probably rolls off
his tongue. And then we'll probably still mess up the pronunciation.
Yeah. Well,
and his brother is another guy who's in the transfer portal who's kind of been linked to Michigan State. I don't know if that will come to fruition or not.
He's been in there a while too, though, so I don't know what's going on. Who's your favorite guy in this class that's not him, since I picked him and you definitely can't double up on that pick?
Well, I'm not going to go with the guy who just signed today. And that's Keon Coleman. Look, I'm like Ricky Bobby. All right. I like hot, nasty, badass speed. All right. And Keon Coleman is the guy who kind of delivers that. He's the only wide receiver in the class. And, you know, they don't even have a running back in there. They have one running back in the class in Davion Prim. But, you know, he's like the big flash, you know, guy gets the ball, does things in the open field. And those are the kind of guys I like. So I think he's the guy that really stands out for me.
Okay. Well, playing off this, and you mentioned we were going to talk about under the radar guys, I say we both pick a guy who's not, because those are the two highest rated guys in the class, who's a guy who's not highly rated that we like. Sure. I'll go first, and it's a guy I talked to just, I think it was 2 weeks ago at this point, but Cameron Allen, the tight end out of Texas. He's one of their four early enrollees, along with Hampton Fay, Michael Gravely, the safety, and Ethan Boyd, the local tackle. But Cameron Allen, if you look at him, he's one of those guys who comes in. Usually tight ends come in and they're either just a blocker who just came up through that mold, or they're just like a receiver who's big. He's got elements of both, and he played a lot more in line as a junior, and then he had some injuries and they realized he's such a great athlete. They played him out wide more, but he really had a breakout season last year as a receiver. But this is a dude that's like he's built pretty well. He's 6'5 and 220, and that is a position that just you talk about. We didn't even mention it, but another position they got nothing out of last year, where they were converting a punter to play tight end. I mean,
right?
They need help there, and it's one thing. You know, again, the receivers are going to be the guys who fly down the field and kind of set the tone for the offense. But they need those underneath the guys. If you're going to create that much space with a vertical threat, you want to have some of these mismatched tight end types. And I think Cameron Allen definitely has the potential to do that. He comes from a high level of play in Texas, but also the fact that he's in here early, he's in the strength program that's kind of becoming the bedrock of Mel Tucker's program here. So I think getting in early, not only to do that, but to train a little bit with Hampton Fay and build that chemistry, I think is going to be big for them.
Yeah. For me, I'm going to go to the big nasties, the big uglies on the offensive line, and say Kevin Wigington from Hunt School in Princeton, New Jersey. He's a 6'5", 290. And the thing we know about all these Tucker recruits on the offensive line is that they are coming in as big guys. They are not coming in at 250, 260, and then they're going to bulk them up, you know, to 290, 300, 310. You know, he's a guy who's already big, and he's 290 pounds at the guard position is something that has been a rare, I don't think has been around for quite a while here for Michigan State. And Wigington, I love the way Wigington plays. I think he's got a lot of drive, a lot of push. He can kind of bully some guys when you watch his film. And I just think he's a guy who could potentially step in pretty quickly if he can continue his maturation process.
Yeah, no, he was one of the guys when I was going through all these back last summer and just looking at their film, he jumped off the film because just like what you talk about, there's a nastiness to the way he plays. I mean, he loves to just put guys on their backs, and that's not always the way it goes for these guys who already have an offer in the bag, and you know, they just are kind of too big for other players. I mean, he is really grinding, and he's one of those guys I think could use some work off the snap of the ball, like probably a lot of players. But the longer the rep goes, the more he competes and gets better. And you also saw he was kind of the sort of a leader for this class of really trying to recruit other guys and helped open up some floodgates in New Jersey for the recruiting efforts. And that tends to play on the offensive line where they play as a group and they feel a little isolated from the team. And if he can kind of steer that group, and if his bullying attitude, if that becomes infectious, I mean, that's going to play into everything Mel Tucker talks about with relentless and intensity. And I think it's just a really good fit for the way they want to build these guys.
Yeah. And you were talking about the recruiting, you know, helped get Gino Vandermark, who's an offensive guard also in this class, and momentarily helped them get Audric Estime, a four-star running back that eventually went to Notre Dame. So
yeah,
it kind of worked here. So,
and that one we haven't talked about. I mean, that would have been a great find for them. Like we've said this off the air. Once Notre Dame steps in and wants a running back, I mean, there's only a couple schools that can compete with that. I mean, they build it perfectly for a running back to come in. But the fact that Michigan State even had a chance at him, to your point, does speak to what the work Kevin was doing. And maybe they started a tiny little pipeline in New Jersey, which would be interesting because that's not an area that you would have thought Mel Tucker had, you know, a great share of.
Yeah, and especially with Greg Schiano back in Rutgers, you know, that was one of his, you know, New Jersey built, but it's not that thing he actually said. But I think, you know, recruiting in their backyard and, you know, winning with players in their backyard, I think was a component of his success at Rutgers the first time around.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my original answer to this question was going to be A.J. Kirk, but upon retrospect, I thought he was kind of rated too high. It's kind of weird because it's almost all three stars. So in some respect, all of them are under the radar. You know what I mean? But
yep.
Ultimately, I decided so. But AJ Kirk is a guy I really like. He hits hard. He covers the field very well. And at Hoban, however you pronounce that, they played him all over the place as a safety. He played up at the line a lot. He rushed the quarterback a lot as an outside blitzer. He could play outside linebacker. He can play safety. I feel like he could almost play inside linebacker if that's something they really wanted him to do. But his football IQ and awareness also really popped off when I was, you know, watching the video. So AJ Kirk is a guy I'm pretty high on as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's I can say from being from that area, having played Archbishop Hoban back in high school, that is an incredible program that develops guys all the time. And he's not only got that training, but he's also, is he Mike Doss's brother?
Yes.
Yep. Is that right?
Yep. Mike, yep. The brother of Mike Doss, the former Ohio State star from the early 2000s and on the 02 national title team and played in the NFL for, I think, 5 or 6 years. So, yeah.
Yeah, and one of the more cerebral players, I think I'm confident Mel Tucker would say, is one of the most cerebral players he's coached. So he's already kind of gotten some high-level coaching before he even gets here, which is certainly encouraging. You know, I'm going to bring up one guy on the opposite end of that, not to say that he's not coached up, but Charles Brantley, the cornerback out of Florida, is a guy they were kind of on early. That is a guy that definitely needs some fine-tuning, but when you think of they just lost Shakir Brown to the NFL and he's that kind of riverboat gambler, kind of sells out for turnovers, and that's Charles Brantley. The recovery speed is there. I mean, there are things you can do with him. When you have that much speed, it's like when I covered Darius Slay on the Lions. When it's that overwhelming speed, you can do some different things with trail technique and can kind of bait quarterbacks into throwing picks. Mel Tucker's from that level where they did that in the NFL, and if you have that kind of athletic advantage at that position in the Big Ten, it's even a little easier, I think, to trick some quarterbacks. So I'll be interested to see kind of how they use him. He's got a lot of technique he's got to clean up, obviously, playing that way. But there's definitely a potential there, you know, maybe after a redshirt year or something like that.
Yeah. Well, I watched the game, Charles Brantley and Stephon Johnson, who were both part of this class, are on the same high school team. And they were on ESPN for a game earlier this year. And I really came away impressed with Brantley. You know, there was a game where they were heavy underdogs and kind of got blown on a little bit. But, you know, I was impressed with the way Brantley hit, the way Brantley played in coverage. And, I like you said, I think he's a high-potential guy in that secondary. And being coached up by, you know, Holler Barlett or whatnot certainly doesn't hurt.
Yep. One question I have for you, since we're kind of talking up these guys. I mean, what would be the concern of this class? What would you say they're missing, or what – where does it just fall short to what it maybe could have been?
Well, I mean, of course, my initial reaction would have been running back. But when you get two guys in the transfer portal, I guess that kind of evens that out. So do we include the transfer portal guys or not when we're talking about this?
Yeah, I think it's part of the calculus.
Okay. All right. I'm going to deliver a hot take. And you sort of alluded to it. But it is quarterback. Because Faye, like you said, has only played 10 high school games. Mm-hmm. And this is the guy you're kind of putting all your eggs in the basket on for this class. And the fact that he's played so little, and he's played good, but he's also played so little that certainly is a little bit of a concern going forward.
Oh yeah. I've described him as a swing for the fences guy. It's why he's for them to be able to, Michigan State does not have the infrastructure right now to go out and get the highly proven 6'5" type gunslinger quarterback. So they got to swing on one who is not really produced and shown it yet, and that's Hampton Faye. And I think that we talk about transfer portal, that's why Anthony Russo is here, is just to get a guy who's, we at least know what he is, he could at least play for right now in case this really takes a long time or just blows up entirely. But yeah, I mean, the only quarterback that they've recruited so far is this real big, you know, swing for the fences type player. I would say that because they're focusing so much at wide receiver, I think they're going to help that, you know, that position out naturally. But again, only if they end up hitting those throws down the field. He's got a big arm, and I think there's definitely potential he could be a good deep ball thrower. But if it's never accurate, which is sometimes the issue with Anthony Russo, I mean, how much does that matter? You know, so it is definitely that to me is definitely the risk there. And then the other thing I would just add is like we talked about, I mean, losing Rashawn Benny was tough because the other defensive tackle they have, Derek Harmon, may turn out to be a good player or a very good player, but he's from a very low level of play in Loyola. And he might have improved this year. I had a hard time finding film on him because it's that kind of level, but it's very raw. And it's especially when you play in the interior of lines, it's you might be able to touch on from your high school days. That's that's sometimes where on low levels, they put the worst athletes. So let's just say he hasn't been tested in the way that I think he's going to get potentially smacked in the face in the Big Ten level. And they probably planned for that when they recruited him, wanted to redshirt him, but they don't have Rashawn Benny now. So it just kind of speeds up the clock of the rest of the guys.
Yeah, for sure. And they really clearly, you got three corners and two safeties in this class. So they really kind of cleaned up in the, you know, got the guys they wanted in the secondary anyway. So like you said, defensive tackle is probably where they recruited the least. You know, they got two linebackers, a handful of defensive ends, so, but a lot of offensive line. I'd say the offensive line is part of where we all think they did their best work. Would that be a correct assessment?
Yeah, I'd put that right up there with the defensive backfield because I mean those are where the numbers are and we like the guys they got too, but especially offensive line. I mean, we've been talking about it for years. They have been really trying to patch that group together from a recruiting standpoint, trying to get the absolute every squeeze every last ounce out of this guard that you're moving to tackle who's, 6'1", and that's just a tough way to play in the Big Ten. I mean, you're trying to create a Jack Conklin out of all these guys and very, very risky. So there's a different level of risk here because some of these guys we talk about, like Ethan Boyd, I think has a long way to go from a technique standpoint. But at least, there is some floor to just the fact that they're big enough to do it and they're not going to get just thrown around off the snap of a ball because they're just base mass. So yeah, I definitely like what they did on the offensive line. I think that's what they had to do in this class and they were able to do it.
All right, I am going to list all the rest of the guys on the 2021 class that we haven't talked about, and if you have anything to say about them, now is your time to do it. You got what we talked. Well, we just said his name. We didn't really talk about him much. You got Alex Okello, a defensive end from Nashville, Tennessee, 6'5", 217. Davion Prim, running back from Oak Park, 6'0", 201. Antoine Booth, cornerback from Dematha Catholic, 6'0", 185. Brandon Baldwin, an offensive tackle from Independence, CC, 6'7", 315. And Carson Castile, inside linebacker, 6'3", 210. Oh, also one more. Hank Pepper, a long snapper, 6'2", 200, also a three-star guy.
Well, I'll leave the long snapper breakdown to you, I'm sure that's your area of expertise.
Sure.
I could say a lot on it, but I just don't want to step on your toes.
Thank you for giving me that freeway to express all of my thoughts and knowledge about how to properly long snap a ball.
Yes. The two guys I would just comment on real quickly, I alluded to a little bit, Tyson Watson, one of those defensive ends. I mean, he comes in at 6'6 and 270. I mean, so for everything I talked about last year with guys like, no offense to him, but Drew Beasley is former walk-on who's really worked hard but does not have that kind of edge-setting body, and I thought he just got eaten up against Iowa because that's what Iowa does. This is kind of the theoretical solution to that, is get a guy who there is no question about how big he can get, how long he is. And you see him just off the snap of the ball. He just gets around high school tackles with ease. And so that's the hope once you can, work in his pad level. And so we'll kind of see it. He might be able to play a little bit this year, but that's kind of where Drew Jordan comes in. So he doesn't have to right away. The one other guy, that was kind of interesting to me was, if I can find him here, Antoine Booth, the cornerback out of Dematha Catholic, which is where in Maryland, where Darren Harris went. But he's kind of, as I talk about Brantley being the riverboat gambler, Antoine Booth's a little more of the just traditional cornerback. He's a safer player. Pretty decently highly rated, but he can tackle. He can just kind of play the position a little bit better. So you can kind of envision a world in which he's more of the maybe the guy who matches up on possession type receivers, whereas and you're not gambling as much with him, but you feel secure in what he can do. And then on the other side, in future years, Brantley is that guy that's just the gambler who can be used in a bunch of different ways.
Yep. All right. Any final thoughts before we sign off here, Nate? It was good talking to you. It's been a minute.
Yeah, it's been a little while. I'm kind of thinking of when we'll do this again, since this is the last signing day until the fall. So I don't know, maybe something will happen. Maybe they'll get 7 more transfers and we'll do another one of these. But I guess that's the part that I'm interested in, is what can they do in this massive, whatever it is, 1,000 kids trying to transfer? And, among that group, can they find enough to patch together some of their holes so they're at least competent enough to bring some of these recruits along? Because I do like this class and the ceiling and the thought process they have behind it, but they got a lot of work to go from what they were last year and what they were at times the year before, and so we see how they can patch together.
Well, it certainly seems like it's possible they'll bring in 7 more transfers, so we may actually be doing that podcast after all.
All right, well, if they get at least 5, we'll plan on doing that.
Deal.
That's a promise.
Deal. All right. Thank you for joining us for this edition of Spartan Speaking, production of the Lansing State Journal, Detroit Free Press, and the USA Today Network. If you enjoy this podcast and the work surrounding it, please consider subscribing. You can follow our coverage at lsj.com, freep.com, and on Twitter at Nate Atkins_, @Phil_Friend, and LSJ Green White. Thanks for listening.